The following podcast contains explicit language.
He really has a deep animosity to the press.
So keep reminding yourself, this is not normal.
And we've normalized it already. Less than a week after the election is over, suddenly Washington is going about its business, talking about who's going to get what jobs, and you would think that Mitt Romney had won. It's a hallucination.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about our president-elect, whose name I keep forgetting. It'll come to me. This is Virginia Heffernan. I am sitting in the very big seat talking into the very big microphone that rightfully belongs to Jacob Weisberg. I am guest hosting today. So the hits keep coming this week about our president-elect. Every time, and this characterized the campaign too, every time we thought things were getting kind of normal, we could recognize the outlines of normalcy, we have been surprised again. This time we've had to look back into the Attorney General Jeff Sessions' background as a racist in Alabama. Michael Flynn, Trump's new national security advisor, would probably be disqualified from a normal administration since he's paid by authoritarian regimes in Turkey and Russia, and people who work with him regularly describe him as unhinged. And finally, of course, there's Steve Bannon, the mastermind of all this, so much that some people are referring to these cabinet appointees as Bannonites. And we're going to hear more about that because I have the best person to talk to about it, Jonathan Chait. The columnist over at New York Magazine has written a fantastic column today explaining why Trump's team is a moving target, but also why racism itself, the racism that characterizes these men, is a moving target, and how in their lives, racist discourse has evolved. Jonathan, welcome to TrumpCast.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I want to talk to you, Jonathan, about this, you know, article that which has a headline that pulls no punches. Donald Trump is building a team of racists.
Mm-hmm.
What I find fascinating in this very, somehow succinct column is that, you know, not only is Donald Trump's team a moving target and we're sorting it out as news breaks, but racism is a moving target, which you get to so well in this. You say Trump's early staffing choices are redefining the boundaries of acceptable racial discourse in Republican politics. Walk us through each of these people that are part of the team. And I mean Steve Bannon, Michael Flynn, and Jeff Sessions. What do you mean they're doing? What are they doing to racial discourse?
That's a great question. So where I begin with this is that Donald Trump ran a fairly racist campaign, but he could have made the choice of doing what George Bush did after running a racist campaign in 1988, which is to say, okay, now I'm elected and now I'm going to govern differently. And this was a little bit ugly, but let's put it past us. But he's not doing that.
We had another moment, in other words, where it might have just been dog whistle and whatever, but he was going to get normal when he chose his cabinet.
Right. But he actually sees this as a real model going forward. So they all have different qualities that put them beyond what was the pale and no longer is the pale of Republican thought. So Steve Bannon has worked at Breitbart News, and he pushed it. It was a fairly race-baiting site all along. It had a section called Black Crime. It was constantly preying on white racial panic. But what he additionally did was to try to build ties both domestically and abroad to what's called the alt-right, which is a white nationalist movement. And actually, according to Breitbart, it's basically like skinheads, but more intelligent. And there was an article in Breitbart saying, what is the alt-right? How are they like skinheads? And the answer they gave in Breitbart, Bannon's publication, was skinheads are dumb and we're smart.
Yeah, it was actually, if you were trying to find sort of anti-white sentiment and you were a skinhead, you could have found it in Bannon's statement about skinheads, where he talks about them as, I mean, he goes very far. Basket of deplorables looks very gentle compared to Steve Bannon's description of skinheads. Can you read some of that to us?
It was pretty amazing. He said, there are many things that separate the alternative right from old school racist skinheads, to whom they are often idiotically compared. But one thing stands out above all else: intelligence. Skinheads, by and large, are low information, low IQ thugs driven by the thrill of violence and tribal hatred. The alternative right are a much smarter group of people.
Right. I mean, I wonder, this kind of hair splitting is very strange. And I wonder how, you know, Steve Bannon styles himself as an intellectual. I wonder how that will inform a presidency that no one expected to have, you know, a lot of intellectual subtlety.
And that's the really interesting and shocking thing about Bannon, is that no one in mainstream national Republican politics, with very few exceptions, wanted to touch racists as part of their coalition. And Bannon doesn't say Nazis and Klansmen are my people. What he says is, I can work with them. They're on the outskirts. They're the relation to them, the relation of the Klan and the skinheads to his vision and now to Trump's politics would be somewhat similar to the relation of the socialist or Marxist left to Bernie Sanders.
Got it. Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is not a Marxist, but he's like, you know, these people are around him. They're influencing him. They're excited about him because he's giving them an in that they never had.
Yeah. So you call the rest of the group Bannonites, I mean, implying that he really is, you know, maybe the Marx here or the, you know, the thinker.
I think that's right. Now, I try to go through some of the statements and beliefs of the other two who I lump in with them.
Please tell me,
Because I think there are a lot of commonalities between them. Sessions comes out of a traditional Southern reactionary racism, basically, where he was rejected for a federal judgeship 30 years ago because he allegedly called a black lawyer boy, told him to watch how he talks around white people. He was just vicious in his prosecution of people involved in civil rights, trying to stop civil rights activists from registering to vote, even though they were innocent according to the law. That's what he comes out of. But more recently, his views on this have maybe not so much evolved as mutated. He's become much more interested in restrictionism and I think the larger suite of cultural politics that emerges out of it, not just the idea that immigration policies need to be broken, that the border needs to be fixed, but that America's identity is under siege and immigration needs to be scaled way back to preserve its racial character.
Right. This isn't about getting felons, getting illegal immigrants who've been, you know, who are convicted felons or radical Islamic terrorists. There's nothing small about the group he has in his sights.
Right. And it's more culture-based than law-based. It's not the argument that we have laws, we're not enforcing the laws, you know, we need to enforce the laws, which in many ways was Trump's argument, but some of what Sessions thinks about this goes farther. I was also struck by the fact that in and around the election, he twice used very, very similar language to attack a quote globalist business media conspiracy of which he associates George Soros as the symbolic head.
And does that read to you as anti-Semitic?
It does.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people get a little too oversensitive picking through statements for signs of anti-Semitism. But first of all, you don't even need to prove that it's anti-Semitic to understand what he's saying. And I think what he's saying is very, very much a piece of this Bannonite alt-right world. It's the idea that you were being attacked by these hordes of immigrants who are transforming the culture of our country, but they alone can't do it. For them to succeed, they need a very powerful group of people manipulating them. And this powerful people is a nexus that controls international business. And because it's international and globalist, which is a favorite Sessions phrase, and a favorite Bannon phrase, they lack loyalty to the United States of America. And they have control of key business, banking, and media outlets to manipulate public opinion. So that's another one of these qualities that brings this worldview together, this imagination that the country's identity is under siege from a coalition of, you know, from above and below. And really, these arguments share a lot of qualities in far-right thought going back many, many decades. You could look at what Charles Coughlin was saying in the 30s, and a lot of those same themes could be found.
Well, we should, I mean, we should say, first of all, that, yeah, Jeff Sessions is Trump's new attorney general, and also that
right.
he's from Alabama. And, you know, the connection between, he's been in state government there for 20 years. He's been AG there for 20 years. Is that right?
Right. He's been a senator. He was attorney general, and now he's a senator. And he was a very early and enthusiastic backer of Trump when the vast majority of the Washington Party wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. So there is an issue of rewarding loyalty here, but he's being brought in an important job. And I think if you bring him together with Bannon and Flynn, then I think you've got a core of early employees who share some commonalities in the way they look at the world.
I think this idea that, you know, till now we've talked about racism as a function or as evidenced by what people have said mostly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's worth pulling apart the threads of some of this contemporary Trumpite thinking and tracing its history. I mean, the only other thought that came up as you were connecting the anti-globalist, anti-Soros thinking to this restrictive immigration policy. And, it, you know, it looks like what Sessions doesn't even like Islam, doesn't want Islam taught in books distributed by the National Endowment of the Humanities. The reason that that's worth bringing up is you don't think of Islam and a Jewish media conspiracy having a close connection. But, you know, during civil rights in Alabama, there was a lot of talk about the elites, and particularly Jewish elites who came down to do voter registration, being the champions of civil rights and being friends to Black Americans in the South. So, you know, I do
You're
think
that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's
I do think
a really good point.
Racism is refiguring itself, but it makes some sense. And
that's right. And yeah. Flynn, I think, is the one that we haven't talked about yet.
Yes.
Flynn is really pushing the boundaries of how his party talks about Muslims. Under George W. Bush, after 9/11, the Bush administration was very careful to distinguish Muslims from terrorists because they believe, and I think correctly, that first of all, it wasn't true that most Muslims were terrorists. And second of all, even whatever bits of truth you could find in this were extremely unhelpful because their goal was to separate the Muslim majority, to separate the moderates, the people who could be persuaded to their side from the terrorists and not to cooperate with the terrorists' worldview, which was promoting this clash of civilizations where all of Christianity / Jews were together against Muslims. They wanted to pry apart the violent Muslims from the nonviolent Muslims. Now, after Bush led the scene, I think you've seen a real pushback in the Republican Party, and that's why their biggest cliche they have, in fact, the closest thing they have to a real policy agreement is this notion that we have to say the words Islamic terrorists.
Yes.
And they almost seem to believe that saying the words are themselves the solution. And I think that in some ways it's taken the place of a solution because they don't really have solutions.
Well, that is that when they say, you know, they're afraid to say it, the elites are afraid to say this, or the politically correct are afraid to say radical Islamic terrorism. I think at some point Trump even said to Clinton, you know, say it. You
yeah.
can't even say it. That to me also underscores that this so far has been such a conversation about language. Who uses what word? When did they use it? What do they start saying? What's a dog whistle? What's red meat? But now that we're forming this team, that Trump's forming this team, we're about to see policy grow out of this language. What do you think we can expect? Bannon is just a pundit. So what do you think we can expect? I mean, you know, this is a pretty extreme group of people, but they haven't been in a position of power, certainly this level of federal power, that they could start really changing what America looks and feels like.
You know, you can only begin to imagine what they'll do. And some of what you imagine as it plays out is rather frightening. Sessions in charge of the Department of Justice for a person who has been so extraordinarily hostile to civil rights and voting rights, you can imagine that not only would he do the kind of evisceration of voting rights and civil rights that you have under normal Republican administrations. George W. Bush has just attacked civil rights enforcement. His administration was completely ruthless. So Sessions going even farther than that, you can just imagine a department that was throwing itself behind the cause of voter suppression with every lever it had at its disposal. Clearly, some kind of immigration restriction is on the docket, some kind of deportation, self-deportation, things to make life difficult for undocumented immigrants and their families.
I just realized why there's something so disorienting about this, and it's that this particular faction of racist thinking since civil rights has belonged to the states, as belonged to a states' rights group. So in other words, what's weird is we have the states' rights crowd, the Confederate flying crowd, the We Do Things Different in Alabama crowd in the federal government, running the federal government. And so, you know, in some ways it is, I mean, maybe I'm trying to be hopeful, but is there a way that it will be difficult to get this kind of regional thinking all codified and turned into legislation at the federal level? Not only are there just practical legal blocks to doing that, but also it's a, it seems very, very hard to build consensus about this, even in a White House where the deck is so stacked.
I think you've identified a really interesting question, and I wish I could give you a better answer, but I think what you're totally right. That's an enormous question. But part of the reason is there's just not been a program about this. Keep in mind, the whole orientation of the Republican Party has been around a specific Reaganite agenda, right? They want to cut taxes, especially at the top. They want to reduce social spending. They want to deregulate businesses, especially finance and fossil fuel emitters. They're against minimum wage. This agenda has been developed for such a long time because that was what their goals were. The alt-right was not part of the Republican Party. So there was no real effort put into a legislative agenda for the alt-right. So now they've got power. So what do? Do they come up with one? Can they come up with one through enforcement? Can symbolism and messaging alone do it? Keep in mind that the idea of the United States as a beacon for the world and a melting pot and a unique country based on the fact that there was no American racial identity has been a point of bipartisan agreement. That's been and a part of the bipartisan agreement is that this is a great advantage that we have, not only culturally and democratically, but also economically. But so consider one of the statements that Bannon made about Silicon Valley, basically, where he said three quarters of the CEOs in Silicon Valley are from South Asia or Asia, and a country is more than an economy.
That was amazing. And I want to slow down for a second on that. We also were kind of running out of time. But what I found, I mean, there's so many. We should just parenthetically state these things blow the brain open. It is very, very hard. I had to read that statement.
And he's also wrong. He's just. I don't want to repeat a falsehood without pointing out that it's not true that three quarters of CEOs in Silicon Valley.
Right. Just so we don't get fake news out here on Trumpcast.
Right.
But you know, just to slow down a bit, I had to read this paragraph literally aloud in your piece today to understand it. He was asked by Trump about one of those kind of talented 10th arguments about immigration. Shouldn't we let in, you know, whatever the current idea of the good immigrant is? Shouldn't we let in Asians? Shouldn't we let in Jews in the past? And, you know, because they go to the Ivy League and then they do so well and they boost the economy. And Bannon said back to that, which is already, used to be the height of racism. Bannon went one further and said, you know, it's not just, we're not building an economy, just an economy in the U.S. It doesn't matter if they create jobs or create wealth or grow the economy, these immigrants, or go to our best schools or build houses or whatever. What matters is we are building a civic society, right?
Civic society, yeah.
And that civic society is meant to be white, that this is a kind of cultural imperative. Or civic imperative that has nothing to do with practical politics.
Well, it has nothing to do with practical economics, but it is kind of politics. Some of that you can do through legislation, with your visa policies, with your immigration policies. Some of it you can simply do through messaging, right? I mean, the symbolism of having Donald Trump in the White House is going to change the way a lot of people around the world think about the United States? And do they want to come here? Do they want to stay here? Can they see themselves as being American?
I find this piece so fascinating, Jonathan. It's called Donald Trump Building Team of Racist. That's the headline. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. And what you said was so nice about my article was so nice and really, that was extremely kind. Thank you so much.
I will see you on the internet. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. TrumpCast is produced by Jason DeLeon. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. Andy Bowers is the chief content officer at Panoply. And I'm Virginia Heffernan, subbing for the great Jacob Weisberg. Tune in for more TrumpCast next week.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.